Now.
Hello, musicians. If you want a rehearsal space in Boston, Cambridge, Ulston, or Brighton, check out the Sound Museum. Our premier community of musicians is growing every day. We will not be undersold. For info, contact soundmuseum.net or call 617-775-4009. Again, that's soundmuseum.net or call 617-775-4009. At the Sound Museum, you play as loud as you want.
Healthy Heady Lifestyle is a team of passionate individuals dedicated to providing tools, resources, and information to people interested or curious in using cannabis for their health. Healthy Heady Lifestyle can help you with everything from information on obtaining a letter of recommendation, finding the best vape for you to use, customized consultations, and everything in between. You can find Healthy Heady Lifestyle on Facebook and Instagram or on the web at healthyheady.com or give them a call at 617-231-6363.
In Massachusetts, a DUI can cost you more than just your license. I'm attorney John Seed, former Boston DUI prosecutor specializing in drunk driving defense. Don't let a DUI destroy your life. Call me, John Seed, today. 617-254-8000. Visit johnseedlaw.com.
Howdy, folks. If you are looking for a top quality truck, pickup, or SUV, check out the Abington Auto Mall. The Abington Auto Mall is the largest pre-owned dealer located conveniently on Route 18 in Abington, Massachusetts. At the Abington Auto Mall, you will be greeted by no pressure, knowledgeable, and friendly salespeople to help you view the large selection of pre-owned vehicles. The Abington Auto Mall has a complete walk-in service, is currently offering an oil change at an unbelievable low price of $12.95. If you want your vehicle service or you would like to view the vehicle inventory at the Abington Auto Mall, please visit us at abingtonautomall.com. That's abingtonautomall.com.
Siri, how can I listen to WEMF on my mobile device?
I found the best way to enjoy WEMF radio on your mobile device. Download the TuneIn app from your app store, then search WEMF on TuneIn. That only would have taken you 10 seconds to Google. Enjoy. Stupid.
Radio. WEMF. Presented by the Sound Museum.
Again, thanks for joining us. Tonight is a very special night on the New Year's Prague show. I'd like to give a shout-out to all you Praguers out there. You know, withstanding the cold, the freezing weather that we're having up here in New England. Very cool out there. May not want to be going out tonight, so I want you to sit back for the next 2 hours and enjoy the ride. I'm here with my Prague colleagues. Fred, what's going on?
Hey, another cold night in New England.
Steve?
Yeah, waiting for more snow.
Woohoo!
Jerry?
Hello, hello. I can't wait till this is all over.
And we got Johnny Collins over here. What's going on, John?
Sitting next to you, Al, makes me feel warm and tingly.
That's what I like. It's sort of this thing about Prague that makes everybody be happy. Well, on our agenda for this evening, we got Mary Fall calling in a little bit. She'll be chiming in and talking with Jerry and having a little bit of an interview with some of the music we got going on. A little bit later on tonight, we have Iz in studio playing some of new music that everybody's talking about. We have it here first tonight on the New Year's Prague show on WEMF. And basically, to all you Praguers out there, sit still, get warm, be careful, stay healthy. This one goes out to Dennis DeYoung. Getting old this week, but he's got a good song for us right now. Castle Walls. Thank you.
EMF, presented by the Sound Museum.
And we're back, and this is the New Year's Prog Show. Happy Friday night, everybody. You just heard Styx performing Castle Walls. Played that for Dennis DeYoung's birthday, which I believe was yesterday.
Two days ago, was it already?
And then we opened, of course, with Kansas, The Spider, and Portrait, he knew, from the Point of No Return album. And in a few minutes, we're going to have Mary Fall in on an for an interview. And we figured we'd play a little bit of music from her. She recently put out a reimagining of Pink Floyd's The Dark Side of the Moon. And this is a track from that recording, and this is Money.
Don't give me that do-goody good bullshit.
Welcome back to the WEMF New Year's Prague Show. Before we go a little further, first a word from our sponsor. That would be me. Jerry LaFaro Designs for the coolest t-shirts on the planet. Check it out, jerrylafarodesigns.com. Bring out your inner animal. In fact, I'm wearing a special t-shirt tonight. It's got a wolf howling at the moon in honor of our guest. And a little bit more about that a little later in the show. We just listened to Mary Fall performing Money off of her album From the Dark Side of the Moon, which is a wonderful reinterpretation of the Pink Floyd classic. Mary first came into prominence as the lead singer of the October Project, a unique and much-loved band started in the mid-90s. Afterwards, she spent a number of years as the voice for many commercials, including Audi and Nike, among many others. Before starting to record solo albums, I hear her laughing back there. Many of the songs from this period and from the October Project can be heard on Live from the Mount Chunk Opera House, which was one of my top 10 albums of the year, as shared on these airwaves a couple of weeks ago. She also sang Going Home, the beautiful theme song in the Civil War movie Gods and Generals. Tonight, the New Year's Prague Show is thrilled to welcome Mary Fall, who is on the phone with us right now. Hello, Mary.
Hey, Jerry. How are you?
I'm doing great. Much better knowing that you're there. So I'm not sure if you've ever been on a show dedicated to progressive music before, but
you know,
here
not,
you are.
Not specifically, no. So this should be fun. You know, my background is so eclectic, but there does seem to be a vein of what I do that's very appealing to people from the progressive world, definitely. And, you know, I got to work with Annie Haslam recently.
I know.
We all love Annie here.
We love Annie.
I know you do. And she's lovely. And she actually lives about a half hour from me. So it was fun. We got to do a couple of songs together at one of her recent shows. It's just fun to sing with her. You know, when I was a teenager, I had all the Renaissance records and used to sing along with them. So it was fun.
I just saw her recently also, and she sounds as good as ever.
Yeah.
Are you two planning any future collaboration?
Maybe. You know, it's really great that they're finally going back to Europe after a long time. She hasn't been able to go back there, and so I think maybe when that winds down, we'll talk about doing something together.
That's great.
Yeah.
You know, your music and of course that of the October Project, you know, it really doesn't fit into any particular category. Which, of course, makes it challenging in the music world to market and hopefully find success in. I mean, you know, is it classical-infused Celtic or folk rock or world music? Or, you know, does it fall under that nebulous adult contemporary category?
I don't know. I don't know. You know, I just have always followed what I loved. And when I left October Project, I think that... I suppose in retrospect, it was probably marketing-wise a mistake, but I got signed to a classical label out of the blue. It was a fluke, and they just thought that my own music was very cinematic, and I had thought, honestly, Jerry, that I would never get another deal. because I was over 40, and my own manager said, forget it. And so I thought, well, if that's the case...
You fired him, right?
I put a band together. I hired people. I thought, I'm just going to do music I love. And the music I love is really eclectic. I love all... I mean, everything, you know? And so I just started doing shows that were a little of this, a little of that, some medieval music. And somehow, through whatever magical, metaphysical thing, I came to the attention of Sony Classical, and they brought me up there, and I love classical music. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of it. I sing a lot of it when I'm home, I you know, but it wasn't something I ever thought was commercially viable, ever. But they kind of liked what I did, enough to sign me. And so I did the record that they asked me to do, but I think in the Prague world, or the October Project pop world, people were expecting that third October Project record, you know, that never happened. And, but I love that record. The record that I made for Sony Classical, The Other Side of Time, and I got to write for movies, which I love doing. Essentially, I'm just very eclectic, and it isn't marketable, but it's who I am, and I can't, I would be a phony if I was doing anything else. Wow. I love those early Judy Collins records. I know that that's not sort of your thing, but the really early ones that were arranged by Joshua Rifkin, and I just thought she could do anything.
Oh, you should see me in a flower dress. Of course I like Judy Collins.
No, you know what I mean. But anyway, so there you have it.
Well, I mean, it's for all those reasons why, I'm comfortable having you on our show tonight, because you are so eclectic, and the progressive music world is actually a pretty welcoming one. You know, I guess
yes, it is.
You know, I mean, it's really what it stands for is adventurous and creativity in music, and you more than fill the bill.
Exactly, and especially when you look at a band like Renaissance, there's a lot of crossover between classical and prog. There just is.
Oh, without question.
And a lot of those guys who are the monsters of it are classically trained.
Yeah, well, can you say Keith Emerson?
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, exactly.
Right. You actually came into the music scene a little later in life. I'd love to hear a little bit more. I know our audience would a little bit more of your history with
October
Project.
I didn't study music. I went to McGill in Montreal. I studied medieval history and literature, and whatever. That's what I loved it. And when I got out of school, I thought I would go into theater just because I had a sort of a big voice, and I wasn't immediately castable. I just had a voice that was more suitable for a 45-year-old person than an 18-year-old or 20-year-old, and so I kind of was just the typical post-grad in New York just trying to struggle and make a living. And I met Julian Amel from October we weren't October Project yet. Mm-hmm. They were also struggling and just wanting to be in music and having jobs that they weren't totally thrilled with. And we got together, and the first time I heard Amel play and I heard the melodies, I just thought, these are astonishing. They're beautiful. And it was almost like I knew them before he played them, And I just knew that we'd form a band, and I never doubted that we would get a deal. There was something about, and I had sort of had many starts and stops in that world too, right. Trying to make a band with this one or that one, and the talent just wasn't there. And in this case, it was, and Julie's lyrics were so passionate and spoke to me, and we all kind of drank from the same well in a lot of ways creatively. So we worked really hard for 2 years and fell into a scene in New York that was happening. Those things are magical. They're sort of like Brigadoon artistically. They pop up here or there, and we happened to fall into that Café Chenet scene on the East Village in New York when right. Jeff Buckley was just coming up. He used to open for us, and
wow.
Katel Koenig, and it was run by this Irish guy who was friends with U2 and Sinead O'Connor. So it was a tiny little hole-in-the-wall coffee house that everybody came down to too, and you know, the record companies were all coming down there, and we just happened to be part of that whole scene and got a deal with Epic. And it's interesting, Michael Kaplan, who was the A&R guy that signed us, is a huge prog fan, huge. And I don't think it's an accident that he's the guy that really got who we were. And and also our producer as well, Glenn Rosenstein. I think he had a sonic vision for us that really made us huge and big and had that sort of transcendent sound that I think, you know, a lot of prog bands are going for. I don't think we had that on our second record as much. I think that Peter Collins is a great producer, but I think he made us sound more like a lot of other bands. Mm-hmm. And more folky. And essentially, you know, Glenn and Epic had a vision for us that was very soaring, you know, and orchestral. And I think we got that on that first record.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, this particular audience, I know, you know, would like to know how you had the audacity to take on the dark side of the moon and do.
I guess somebody said I've got big cojones, but it was, you know, here is the deal. When I left Sony Classical basically folded, you know, the Germans bought it and everybody that I knew was gone, and Peter Gelb, who signed me, went to the Met, and that was it. You know, they didn't renew my contract and they didn't want to do anything that was crossover or anything other than, you know, Yo-Yo Ma, and that's fine. So I thought, well, what am I going to do now? Do I want to go back and be a girl with a guitar? And I didn't. I wanted something that, I don't know, we incorporate a little bit of theater, I was thinking that Dark Side of the Moon was saying, lyrically, all of the things that I was feeling about the modern world in a very theatrical way. Mm. And, I mean, a lot of bands have done Dark Side of the Moon. They've covered it or made it their own, you know, because I think it's a great work of art, and I think that much like Shakespeare or you know, operas, you can translate it and make it your own. And it is, you know, it doesn't have to be exactly like the original. So it's sort of a rite of passage for a lot of bands to scale that Mount Everest. That's the musical, you know, of the music of Pink Floyd. And so, but mostly it was that it spoke to how I feel in a way that I could never write. I wish I wrote that way. I wish I wrote like Roger Waters and Dave Gilmour, but I don't. I think Roger Waters is almost sort of like, you know, obviously drank from the same well that T.S. Eliot did. And, he reminds me of that. He reminds, you know, sort of lines out of the wasteland. And I just felt that it spoke to the chaos and the cacophony of information that we as modern 21st century humans have to deal with, that I don't think any other human in history, any other, you know, species, you know, generation of humans has had to deal with. And I think in the midst of it, it's so easy to lose your center and lose your soul. And I think that that record spoke to it with such passion and immediacy. And so it was all the things I wanted to sing and scream about that, and you know, that album gave me the words to do it and the music to do it. And so Mark Doyle, who was, you know, spent a lot of time in Boston, by the way, and played with all kinds of bands, Meatloaf and all, tons of people. Hmm. Mark and David Werner, who, if you ever remember Wiz Kid, he was on Epic as well. They were great producers. So we all, this was the two of them and me in a tiny little hole in the wall recording studio. And I would drive up to Syracuse every other weekend or so. And we built this record layer by layer by layer. Wow. It was a labor of love. We did not have a deal. This was all on spec. And then, we shopped it around a little bit and V2 got it. They really got it and said, look, we want to make sure you can do this with just four guys, because we can't afford to send an orchestra out on the road. And we did it. We did it in this beautiful little theater, and we had sort of avant-garde film, and it was, you know, we really put on a show.
So this was like almost an audition. It was an audition to get a deal, in a sense.
And they flew up, and they loved it, and they came backstage, and they kept going on, and I'm like, oh, we could do this, and we could do this. They said, whoa, so do we have the deal? They're like, oh, yeah.
Wow.
And so it was so exciting, and then just before the record was about to come out, the label folded. They ran out of money, which was a shame. They were a wonderful label. The White Stripes were on V2. Moby was on V2. Mm. So they gave me a lifeboat, let me buy it back. I released it digitally a couple of years ago, and that's basically the story.
Yeah, it's clearly, you know, it sounds like a project of passion. Was this something, did you have this idea floating around in your mind for a few years?
It's funny. I always loved Pink Floyd. I grew up in a big Catholic family, middle kid, and we had the big console in the living room. So I had to listen to everybody else's music all the time, and it was a melting pot of music. So I had an older sister. I had two older brothers. My oldest brother was really into Dylan. And then my brother Alan was always into Pink Floyd and Prague and things like that. So if he put on Dark Side of the Moon, the whole family had to listen to it. Do you know what I mean? And but it was always, to me, it was boy music for girls.
Right.
If you know what I mean? It was always, to me, so melodic. And it was sometimes Prague, for me, would get so complicated and show-offy sometimes. Do you know what I mean? Musically.
We do.
You know what I'm talking
we do
about.
We do here, for sure.
Almost complicated for the sake of complication.
It was always that, like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah. And for me, it's still always about the story and the music. And Pink Floyd had that in spades.
Yeah,
a lyrical point of view and a passion and something that had... Great art has to have something to say that's bigger, you know, than boy meets girl and all that, and Pink Floyd has that.
Yeah, that was really a perfect melding of concept and music and creativity.
Oh my God, in every way. Yeah.
And out of curiosity, just to do a project like that, did you have to get approval from the members? Are any of them aware?
No. You know, the way it works is just once the thing has been released commercially, you just basically have to, you know, pay a certain fee per song, and it's a set fee no matter who it is, and mm-hmm. and so you know if I cover someone unknown who's done something, I mean, I still have to sort of register it and pay a fee, and other than that, there were certain restrictions in terms of where I could perform it. I can only perform the full version of Dark Side of the Moon that we did up in Syracuse if it's a place that serves liquor. In other words, they don't want me to make a Broadway show out of it, which I'm not going to do anyway. So,
interesting.
That was it. And they never had any problems. So many people have covered Dark Side. You know, I think they're used to it.
Right. Very interesting. Okay. Well,
yeah.
I adore this version, that you did. It's really, you know, highly recommended for our listenership.
Yeah.
I want to get ready to play another song of yours, but, you know.
What are you going to play?
Well, I'm going to set it up like this, okay? It turns out you had a really big fan. So big, in fact, that she included a reference to you in one of her novels. I am, of course, I'm talking about Anne Rice of Interview with the Vampire fame.
That's right. I got a letter from her a couple of years ago that was a fan letter. You know, October Project had hoped to get something into Interview with the Vampire way back 20 years ago when the movie was made, and we didn't have quite the star power to compete with Guns N' Roses, but Anne found out about me, wrote me a beautiful, beautiful letter, and then when my record Love and Gravity was done, a friend of mine brought it over to her where she was living, and she handed it to her, and Anne handed her back the galley of her new book called Interview with the Vampire, and or not Interview with the Vampire, The Wolves of Midwinter, and she said, here, give this to Mary, tell her she's in the book. So my friend said, oh,
pretty
gosh,
heavy.
Well, Mary should write a song for the audiobook version. And Anne was like, well, yeah, that'd be great. And so I did. And That's what you're about to play.
That's what we're about to play. With that, we're going to listen to Exiles, The Wolves of Midwinter. And that's actually why I'm wearing this shirt with a wolf howling at the moon, Mary.
Oh.
Let's listen to that. Exiles, The Wolves of Midwinter by Mary Fall, who was our wonderful guest here tonight. Before we part ways with Mary, I want to tell our audience that Mary will be performing tomorrow night right here down the street in Cambridge at Club Passim. And I believe there are only a handful of tickets left.
That's it.
And the good news is she will be back in New England in much more hospitable weather when she takes the stage at the Tupelo in Londonderry, New Hampshire on July 18th. I strongly urge my friends and listeners in the area to check it out. In fact, I command you to. Mary, thanks so much for joining us here tonight. This was really great.
It was wonderful. We have to do it again, Jerry.
Absolutely. You come in and play live for us. How about that?
I'd love it. I'd love that. Okay, and I will see you tomorrow night.
I will. Okay. Drive safe tomorrow. Thank you, Mary.
Thank
bye-bye.
You. Thank you, Mary. Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the New Year's Prog Show. And that was Back to the Tunnels by Holding Pattern. Tony Spada, I think you're listening out there tonight. Hello. Anyway, let's get to some news here. We like to do the prog news every week. And this week, as usual, there's always lots to share. Got to start out with this story, though. I want all you guys to chime in. Is the world really ready for Jethro Tull, the rock opera? Please chime in, folks. I mean, last time I saw Jethro Tull, I don't know, the voice just wasn't there.
Well, it's not Jethro Tull. This will not be Jethro Tull. This will be Ian Anderson and his band doing Jethro Tull the rock opera. So figure that one out.
With rock operas, you don't have to do it without microphones.
Yeah, well, maybe he'll bring guest singers, I hope. So.
Oh, yeah, he'll have to. That guy will be there. Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we're all fans of Jethro Tull music here. Loved Jethro Tull in his prime, and Ian Anderson's always a great character on stage, so hopefully maybe he can pull off a rock opera. Who knows? I mean,
yeah, but this is going to be other parts of the world outside of the U.S., this tour, correct?
I don't know. I just saw it announced this week. I have not seen it.
I think Europe and South America.
Yeah, on the list, and what else? Even followed by Russian, European, and South American dates. So
not in the U.S. yet.
But we'll see. I'm sure he'll be bringing it to the U.S. because we know Ian Anderson loves to tour. I mean, boy, is he a hard worker as far as touring goes. He's definitely one of them that tours the most.
It sounds like he just wants to get out of the house.
As if he wasn't busy enough with his salmon fishing business and all, everything else he does, you know.
Why do you think I come to Boston every Friday night, right?
Anyway, this week there was a lot of announcements. The summer shows are starting to be announced. We had announcements this week from hey, our local band, Boston, has announced that they'll be touring this summer. But believe it or not, no New England dates, at least not at this time. So,
it doesn't matter. They're not a prog band anyway.
Another band that, actually most of these bands are, I guess, teetering the prog world, Steely Dan, made their announcements for their summer tour, which is the Rockabye Goalie Angel Tour. And I'll be stopping at the Blue Hills Pavilion at the end of July, July 30th and July 31st. We also have Styx, which is going on the road with Def Leppard and Telsla. And they'll be stopping at Mohegan Sun, Bank of New Hampshire Pavilion, and Xfinity Center starting the beginning of July. And we played earlier a Styx tune from Dennis DeYoung and honor of his birthday this week. Also on the announcement of tours, also on the fringes of Prague, I guess you'd call it, Larry Coryell announced his tour with called With Strings Attached, and they'll be stopping at a few places in April. Only one's been confirmed as far as the venue goes, and that's Stage 1 in Fairfield, Connecticut. But he'll also be coming to, I believe, Scullers. And I think that's it for New England.
That's the New England Jazz Bastion, I think.
I was there recently. It's good. Mm-hmm. And on the heels of you announcing a couple of weeks ago that Todd Rundgren was going to be around, I went and got my tickets for up in Plymouth.
Well, good
for Flying
you.
Monkey.
Excellent.
I love Todd.
Yeah.
I'm gonna try to corner him and get him on this show.
That would be fantastic.
That would be a gut.
That would be a coup, yeah.
East of Utopia.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
I'm going to work on my headlock.
All right. Let's wrap up with this piece of news. Maybe John Collins can fill us in on a little bit of this, too. The label Music for Nations announced their return this week. Many of you might know Music for Nations. They were big in the metal scene back in the 80s, signing bands like Metallica, Megadeth, Anthrax, and Manowar. But in the 90s, they also did some prog metal with Opeth, with Paradise Lost, Anathema, and Merciful Fate. Any comments there?
Without you, Fred, I wouldn't have known about this. So we're going to have to do some research. But any time a record label comes back, I think it's good news.
Absolutely. I mean, bring back some of that classic music from...
You know, because I think, when was it, a week or two ago, we were mulling the demise of the CD, except for old fogies like us, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. I still buy CDs.
Yeah.
So anyway, so it will be interesting to see what Music for Nations, comes up with in the future, but it's glad to have them back, so... Hmm. Anyway,
with that, maybe it's time to go back and do a little music. Would you say that's a good idea?
Why don't we? I do want to put one more announcement out.
Okay.
The Ross Fest, which is the Rites of Spring Festival, which is a big prog festival out in Pennsylvania, has announced that their tickets are on sale today. So that's good news for Ross Fest.
That's in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania.
That is correct.
For folks who haven't been there. That is a fun little town to go to.
Oh,
not only just for the music, but the battlefield is pretty incredible tour.
Yeah, historical reasons. Yeah. All right, so it's about time to go back into some music, and we're going to play a little Paul McCartney and Wings for you right about now.
the city. And the ring at the end of my nose makes me look rather pretty. It's a pity there's nobody here to witness the end. Save for my dear old friend and confidant, Mademoiselle Kitty.
WEMF Radio, presented by the Sound Museum, Boston.
Talk. Conversation is the only way.
Any explanation would not ever suffice.
You're back on the New Year's Prague Show. How's everybody doing out there? Yeah, probably freezing your ass off right about now, aren't you all? Well, it took some time. Took a little bit of time. But tonight, we have the core of Iz coming in on a freezing Boston night. And last time I checked, it was 2 below 0. Well, without further ado, I'd like to send this over to the Is Group. They're here to play for us tonight live. Here you go, Is.
WEMFradio.com listeners. That was Abby Song from the album My River Flows. We are 4/7 of Is. I'm John.
I'm Laura.
I'm Tom.
There's only one more female, so I must be Anne Marie.
Now, while I tune my guitar to get it back to standard tuning, because that song was in a strange tuning, Tom will start another song.
All right, so this is called Straight Line. It's a brand new song, which I don't think we've ever done before. And then we're going to go into the end of Crush of Night. So here's Straight Line into Crush of Night.
Like a light along the skyline lingers. The innocence had filled their mind. They could not tell the difference outside, inside.
That was Straight Line. The first one is off the new album. It features Anne-Marie Burns. And then that was Crush of Night from our previous release called Crush of Night. So what we'd like to perform next for everybody is another kind of mashup. It's another new song.
Mashup.
Two new songs. Two.
The first one is called Illuminata. And we're going to go right into another new song called If It's True, featuring Laura Mead. And then back into Illuminata.
I'm still tuning. Paul, please. Be with you in a moment.
I gave you a whole song, guys.
I couldn't tune during the song. This is Illuminata.
How the road
Gist of the lyrics.
We hope you were singing along by the end.
WEMF Radio, we put the NF back in radio.
And welcome back to the New Year's Prog Show. And what you just heard was, four-sevenths of his performing live in the WEMF studio. And we greatly appreciate them coming in to play for us.
Yeah, that was one hell of a night. You know, we're talking about a band that comes back from, our first show was 2002. And we're going to cut out to a little music so we can all download from all that show. And we're going to bring them back into the studio right now and do a little bit of interviewing with these very special people of ours.
One
everlasting instant. It's enough to take your breath.
Presented by the Sound Museum.
This is John Galgano from IZ. You are listening to the New Year's Prague show on WEMF Radio. That was our brand new track called The Everlasting Instant from our forthcoming new record, which is called Everlasting Instant. I will now throw it over to Dave.
Thank you, John. That was incredible performance live in the studio, if you didn't hear that. This is Dave Peterson from Peterson Mechanical, the fastest growing HVAC company in New Hampshire. If you have want a free quotes, free estimates, or you don't feel your service company is doing what they should be doing on site, don't be afraid to call 1-603-845-9458. And now back to a live interview here with IZ.
Thanks, Dave.
Hey, fellas.
Hey, John.
Hey, John.
This is John Collins from Progression Magazine, and I've been designated spokesperson on behalf of New Year's to speak with IZ tonight. So, put on those headphones there, Tom. That'll help. Okay, all righty. Can you hear me?
Can hear you.
All right, good enough. We have an interesting collection of folks here from the band, 4/7 of the band, which comprises two husbands and their spouses, which I think is pretty interesting. And this really led me to wonder, what happens when musical differences arise at home? Does anybody
for a softball first question? You're gonna throw that.
I really want to know. Does anybody ever end up sleeping on the couch?
Well, I mean, the real musical differences have come between us two.
He's oh, that's a cop out.
To me.
No, it's not a cop out because, you know, we're songwriters. We've been songwriting together since we were very little. I mean, I used to make him play band with me.
Okay, so you're taking my question seriously.
Yes.
I'll stop right now.
No. Come on. Yes, I want to hear all the dirt.
No, yeah, sure. I used to make him, and, you know, eventually he got to be a better guitar player than me over the course of 2 months by the time he was in high school. And he taught himself bass, and then I had to start giving him some credence.
And that process is still ongoing.
Yeah.
We, as Tom said, we're all songwriters, we're all creative, we're all artists, so there are differences from time to time. Should this note be this? Should this melody be this? Should we repeat this section again? Mm-hmm. Luckily, it hasn't for a long time gotten to the point where someone's on the couch. So I think as we've grown as people and human beings, and we've learned to sort of play together and be creative together, that it's gotten to be really a nice process.
So you absolutely, that's an interesting aspect of this, is because you have to transcend your differences because you're all related.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
You're right, John.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
So what about the creative process as far as working at home? I mean, do you guys throw out ideas like over breakfast, you know, with your, you know, husbands and wives, et cetera, et cetera? Do you have, like, you know, ways to, you know, jot down ideas as they come up spontaneously, that kind of thing?
It happens a million ways, and I know every songwriter says this, but it really does happen in a million different ways. The iPhone is fantastic because, you know, as soon as an idea pops in, the voice memo, I mean, that's the reason I have an iPhone, because I have voice memos. It's like a tape recorder, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And almost all the ideas for the last two albums have been like sung onto that voice memo, at least my ideas. And then I'll email them to him or, and yes, we do talk. Amory and I talk about music a lot. And about, you know, does this sound right? How's the drum sound? I don't think, John, you can ever imagine how long we spend on the drum sound. And part of the thing is we have two drummers, so we don't have the drum sound. We have two drum sounds. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm constantly sending, do the drums sound good? Sending it to John, letting Anne-Marie hear. You can listen to it in the car here. So anyway, yeah.
Yeah, let's get Laura and Anne-Marie in on this. Do you two ever share ideas, just the girls getting together?
No, we
not
don't.
Really.
We sing
really
what
don't.
They tell us to sing, really.
That's a really good idea, John.
It is.
That would be interesting.
No, we, I think we take direction very well, and together, and from our guys, and that works out well for us.
Yeah, and I mean, I think just living in this, you know, the house together, I'll be listening to something, you know, through the walls that Tom's working on, and I automatically might start developing a harmony or so that
does he know that you're doing this?
Oh yeah. Well, because I don't let him ignore me, but I mean, even though I do call myself the album widow for like the last 2 months, you know, the album's about to come out. I hear the sympathy through the radio waves, but you know, he's a little perfectionist. I think he has a little reputation, Tom, for being a perfectionist, and you know, my suffering is everybody else's benefit because he does. He's meticulous. He wants it to sound really good, and so I'm willing to give him up for a little while.
Yeah, so
we can make. Yeah, I say that now.
It's interesting that suffering is part of the equation. Does that ever come out in the lyrics?
My own suffering?
Yeah,
I don't think so. That's my solo album.
Oh, okay. Well,
she doesn't even know about it.
As long as you brought that up, let's hear about the solo album. Has it come out yet?
No, I don't have one.
Oh,
no, I don't have one coming out.
Okay, well, maybe there's a reason for one.
I'm thinking about it.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Let's hear about your solo album.
My solo album is it's morphed over the years, the many, many years. It is going to be a more collaborative effort now. I'm not sure exactly what direction that will go in, but it's going to be me and culling from my is family to help me complete it.
So it'll be is like in some ways.
Maybe. Maybe not.
Okay. Well, you already have a solo album out, don't you?
I do. I have an EP out.
Okay. Okay. So this is going to be a full-fledged album.
Yes.
Okay. Something to look forward to.
Yeah.
You don't know yet when we can look forward to it or when it's going to come out?
I do not know.
Okay. Okay. You know, you guys have been asked this question by myself in the past, and but I think for the benefit of the listening audience, it's probably worth going over again. Can you guess what that is?
Can't guess it now.
Well, there was a pun in that last question at the end of it. And anyway, what does IZZ mean? The name of the band is IZZ. It's IZZ or IZZ. And I've been told, I think it was by John, that it can be a capital I and two small Zs, or it can be a capital I and two capital Zs. What does it mean?
Well, the origin is my love of the New York Mets. Sorry, Boston. Sorry about 86.
Yeah, it's not the Yankees.
Back in the mid-90s, the Mets had a pitcher called Jason Isringhausen, and his nickname was Izzy. And I was obsessed. I thought the Mets were going to have the next great pitching staff, and they didn't. But for some reason, when Tom and I were talking about what we should name our band, I said, Izzy's such a cool name. We should call our band Izzy. And I think Tom said, it sounds like Iggy Pop, so we can't call it Izzy. So then we just said, well, let's call it IZZ, because at the time we didn't have a set lineup. We didn't know who was going to be in the band at the time. So we just said, well, whoever is in it, that'll be what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of justified it that way. Mm-hmm. And so that's how it was born. And we also liked the fact that it was only three letters, so you can make it really big on posters.
It's certainly unique, and it's not to be confused with any other band by any similar name, because there aren't any.
That's certainly a benefit, yeah.
Yeah. So how far are you into the new album, and when is that going to come out? And let's throw a couple other questions in there about the nature of the album. Is it conceptual? How is it different from what you've done in the past?
The album is it's being mastered as we speak, and it is probably due out around April 7th. We will be releasing some information very shortly within the next couple of weeks about a specific release date, but it's imminent. So in the next month and a half or so, you should have a new IZZ album on your hands.
Okay, wonderful. Well, one last question before we wrap things up here. How about playing live? What are your plans to present this album to audiences?
Yeah, we're excited. We have a show at the New Jersey Prog House on April 19th with Lo-Fi Resistance. And then we have a show in Rochester on May 2nd. There will be details to follow exactly where and when that show is. And then I think we're playing in Boston at the end of June. I don't know if that's ready to be announced, but I just announced it. And we're working on a few other shows, hopefully in other parts of the country. Mm-hmm. Would be nice too.
Okay, super guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, and we like to thank IZZ for coming in. And we would like to close this evening's festivities with a track of theirs called Star Evil Nomasu. Thanks for listening, everybody. Good night.
Justice is the fruit, and the truth will set you free. True happiness for you.
Forest stand.